Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Here I am, Tom Hartman, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention, Radio Row, here in the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado, and having a fine time. And sitting across from me is
Steve Hildebrand.
Hey, Steve. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You're the deputy campaign manager for Obama.
Unless I've been fired, which is always possible.
Sorry, Stephen. We were dealing with all this technical stuff ran up to it. Democratic status, based out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Currently the deputy national campaign director of Barack Obama's presidential campaign in 2005. You joined Paul Tews to form Hildebrand Tews Consulting, a campaign consulting firm with offices in Washington and Sioux Falls. And you worked on with Tom Daschle in 2004. John Thune, well, you've been around this business for a while.
22 years. It's time to retire.
It could be. A number of questions come to mind immediately. First, broadly, your take of what's going on here with the convention, how the candidacy is going. You know, the selection of Biden, obviously. You know, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, this is a very, very important week, and it's a week that Barack and Senator Biden take very seriously. This is an opportunity not to come to Denver for the parties. It's a really important time to communicate with the American people and to broaden our base of support. This week is the opportunity to provide the American people with a better sense of the kind of president that Barack Obama would be, the kind of change that he would bring to Washington, and what that change means for the American people.
Steve, let me... We're talking with Steve Hildebrand, the deputy campaign manager for the Obama campaign. I have been watching the former CIA officer, Larry Johnson, who had come out in defense of Valerie Plame a year or so ago and thus was semi-embraced by some of us, by the left press anyway, as, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my enemy, is my friend, I guess. But he's a Republican. He was a donor to the Bush 2000 campaign. He runs a blog, No Quarter. It was on his blog that first appeared the story about Michelle Obama saying Whitey on tape, and he, for months, continued to insist that he had the tape or he knew where the tape was. His material is showing up on a number of other blogs, not just his material, but his and others like it, about how the caucuses were stolen, the elections were rigged, that Hillary's people have been dissed. I mean, it is no longer a whisper campaign, and it's no longer small. There is a huge effort, and it appears to me like this is a huge effort that's coming right out of the bowels of the RNC, or people affiliated with them, or freelance Republicans, to make the Hillary delegates feel like they have just been absolutely dumped upon and that they need to get revenge. First of all, reality check me on this, you know, because I'm seeing this. I'm seeing it on websites like MakeThemAccountable.com, which is run by a friend of mine who I think is very well-intentioned, but just trashing Obama every day. What's the story here? What's going on? Have I identified this accurately, do you think?
Well, I mean, it's politics at its finest.
Or
its worst. People in Washington want to continue to play the same old political games. Nothing's going to change in this country. If people are serious about trying to reduce partisanship, trying to reduce special interest influence that has dominated the decision-making in Washington, if they want to keep that up, they should go support John McCain because he is more of the same. There's no question.
Sure.
His voting record with George Bush proves it. His economic policy positions are identical to George Bush. He wants to keep troops in Iraq for a number of years. He ain't looking for change. He's looking for more of the same. And
you're singing to the choir here, right?
People, yeah. I know. I agree. I'm a big fan of Bear America. The bottom line is there's a stark difference between these two candidates. If people want to play political games, that's fine. That's up to them. But if people are really serious, they need to get to work and get behind Barack Obama and Joe Biden and move forward.
I absolutely
Regarding
agree.
Some of the Hillary people,
yeah.
Here's what I want to say. I am an emotional supporter of Barack Obama's. And I have been a deep, loyal supporter of the Clintons over the years. I worked in both campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
I put my butt on the line, and I was happy to do it. And I believe that the Clintons ran this country very successfully and moved this country forward and put us in a great position that George Bush took away.
Mm-hmm.
I don't take anything away from people who had strong, emotional, aggressive support for Senator Clinton. I applaud them for that.
Yeah,
I
no, I you know,
should.
In fact, I think I'm probably one of the few talk show hosts who, right up until the day of, until Hillary Clinton conceded, was saying I'm in favor of either one of them. Because I know a number of my colleagues were just, you know, coming right out, and most of them in favor of Obama. And I was saying, I think either one of them would make a great president. Up until the day that Joe Biden was selected, I was saying, I think Hillary Clinton would make a great vice president. In fact, I wrote an op-ed piece suggesting that she should be the first choice of Barack Obama. This was back, you know, a couple months ago. I haven't been an advocate of any of these, and I believe my listeners have enough intelligence to make up their own minds. But I have tremendous respect for Hillary Clinton. What I'm concerned about is some of her followers is probably the wrong word because it almost diminishes them. You know, people who are just very enthusiastic supporters, you know, very enthusiastic about her, are being scammed right now by a right-wing machine. And what it reminds me of is when Chuck Colson and Don Segretti, when Nixon figured out that he could not beat Ed Muskie. I mean, all the polling came in, he couldn't beat Ed Muskie, but he could beat George McGovern. So they send Don Segretti and Chuck Colson up to New Hampshire. They steal letterhead from the Muskie campaign. They write this letter using the word Canuck, which is a slur for French Canadians, which is about a third of the population of New Hampshire. William Loeb, the publisher of the Manchester Union Leader, puts it on the front page of the paper. And then there's the story that they actually even put LSD in Muskie's coffee, and he gets up on the back of this flatbed truck and tripping his brains out and starts crying about his wife. And it killed his candidacy. And, you know, Republicans have a long history of this. I grew up in Michigan, you know, where the Republicans were constantly going into the Democratic primaries elected. I mean, they had a weak candidate for governor. So they got the Jack Kevorkian's lawyer elected as in the Democratic primary as the guy who was going to run against him. They choose their opponents. They have a long history of messing in these elections. And it looks to me like something very similar to the Chuck Colson operation is what's going on right now. And the Hillary supporters are the victims of this. Or am I just blowing this all out of proportion?
Well, I mean, I'm obviously not in a position to confirm any of that. And you sound really smart, and you sound like you know what you're talking about. So I'm not going to diminish that in any way.
Feel free to tell me I'm a conspiracy nut. I hope that's the case.
That you are?
Yeah. Yeah, I would love to be proven wrong on this.
I think what's important here is that Senator Clinton has made it incredibly clear to her supporters and to the American people that it is very important that we get Barack Obama elected president. You will hear from her several times this week. You will hear from President Clinton. This is a party that is united.
Yeah.
And urgent for change in this country. And there's going to be a handful of people who just aren't going to agree to become involved. And that's okay. People, everybody's got their right to,
sure.
to make their own decision to decide what they want to do in this country. But if people are passionate about a need to help people who don't have health care, who, you know, help people who are suffering from a really serious mortgage crisis, who want to bring our troops home, who want to take the money that we're spending in Iraq to rebuild their schools and their roads and their infrastructure and put it to work here in the inner cities where we really need to fix roads and schools and the infrastructure
and,
here.
And the rural areas as well. Then it's time to get with the program. Absolutely.
Get on board, work your tail off, and help Barack Obama and Joe Biden get across this finish line. It's going to be close. This is going to be very close, and there's a stark difference between the kind of president that Barack Obama will be and the kind of president that John McCain will be.
We're talking with Steve Hildebrand, the deputy campaign manager for the Barack Obama campaign. We just have a little less than a minute left. I hear that Teddy Kennedy's actually in town, and he may make an appearance tonight. Do you know? Can you confirm that?
I don't know. A lot of the Kennedy family's going to be here, and he's obviously had some issues with his health, and yeah. we pray every day for him.
Yes.
He's somebody who has meant the world to Barack and to Michelle, and we're very honored to have so much of the family here, and there'll be a wonderful tribute tonight to the Kennedy family and to Senator Kennedy.
This convention has the potential to be, I mean, it's almost like we're watching Camelot reorganize itself again. You know, talk about the Kennedy legacy. It really feels like Barack Obama is the heir to that legacy.
So, got to get him elected.
Yeah. There you go. From your lips to God's ears. Steve Hildebrand, the deputy campaign manager for the Barack Obama campaign. And Steve, keep up the great work.
Great to be here. Thanks for being in Denver.
Yeah, my pleasure. BarackObama.org. Check it out. Thank you, Steve. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
So they say they deserve to have their day. They would like us all just to go away. That's one thing we won't do, 'cause we've got a war to end. An environment needs the men. We need to do all that we can to protect the right to choose. Brothers and sisters who are gay deserve to have their wedding day. We need to be assured health care for all will be insured.
And welcome back. 16 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. It's going to be kind of catch-as-catch-can here throughout today and tomorrow and Wednesday and Thursday, and then the same as, you know, going on next week. Right now we're waiting for Congresswoman Donna Edwards, who's going to drop in and say hi, but she's apparently going through security right now. And so let's see here if I can figure out how to make this computer work. There we go. Lorenzo in Sandusky, Ohio. You're on the air, Lorenzo. Thanks for calling.
Hey, how's it going, Tom?
Just great. What's on your mind today, Lorenzo?
I have a question for you. Do you think a majority of these Clinton supporters that say they're going to vote for Barack, if they're from red states like Arkansas and Kentucky and West Virginia, I really don't think it's going to have that big an effect on the election, because Barack, well, they're going to win those states anyway. So until they start telling us a percentage in swing states, like Pennsylvania and Ohio and things like that, I don't really think it's that big a deal.
Yeah, well, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how this plays out, and it's going to be interesting to see if the right wing attempts to inflame Hillary Clinton's supporters and delegates, you know, particularly the attempts that, you know, for example, the Drudge Report, you know, dissed and all these headlines and things, you know, your point, I think, is well made, but if their attempts are successful or not. And my guess is that most of the Clinton delegates are really they're Democrats first, and, you know, and loyal supporters of Hillary Clinton second. And as such, they want to see the Democratic Party win, and they also are going to, and frankly, I would hope that they would join me in hoping that Hillary Clinton can be the next Senate Majority Leader, because we really need somebody of her caliber and standing as the Senate Majority Leader. And, you know, it's just, you know, what we have right now with Harry Reid, is, in my opinion, you know, tragic, I guess, is the closest word. So, anyhow, Kevin in Detroit. Hey, Kevin, what are your thoughts on this?
Hey, Tom, love the show. Just two quick points. I don't believe that Clinton supporters have fallen victim to a right-wing tactic. I believe they've fallen victim to Clinton's scorched earth approach to the Democratic primary. And I would argue that Senator Clinton, and I hope she does this in her speech Tuesday, would take a more direct, a more clear message of, hey, I said some things in the primary that weren't true, one of them being that he's not ready to be commander-in-chief. I mean, you know, the point is I think she needs to be a lot clearer on her support for Obama.
Stop referring to him as her opponent and start referring to him as her previous opponent or as the nominee.
And also, you know, I've hardly ever heard her say, I don't think I've ever heard her say a bad word about John McCain. And I have yet to hear her really throw blows such as Biden has, such as we know she's able to do, at John McCain. And I hope that she does that at the convention. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And I agree with you. I hope so, too.
And, the reality is, you know, she's going to have to slip away at some of that web that she's weaved during the primary. I mean, all the way from...
And by the way, our phone number 866-303-2270, let you all know. And Kevin, I don't think that it was Hillary and Bill Clinton, frankly. Bill Clinton, I think, you know, went off the reservation a couple of times, but
right.
I really think that it was Mark Penn. What we were seeing was, you know, a Steve Schmidt kind of guy, Mark Penn, you know, a take no prisoners type of political strategist. And mm-hmm. It's the wrong way to run a primary, frankly, and I think it backfired on her.
Right, I totally agree, but she's got to take the onus. Thanks for taking my call, Tom.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Kevin. I appreciate the call. It's good to hear from you. It's really quite remarkable. You know, everything, you look at everything that's going on. By the way, Tim Pawlenty, oh, man, this is incredible. He promises CEOs contact with influential government officials, the cabinet, the president, the next president. The LA Times reporting today. This is from their story, from the LA Times story. The practice of corporations and unions making big convention donations has a long tradition and is criticized by groups that want to limit the role of money in politics. And then they talk about both the Republican and Democratic parties have conventions have corporate-sponsored receptions. But the governor of Minnesota, Tim Pawlenty, the host, I guess you'd call him, of the Republican convention, he's just laid it right out. The LA Times said on the GOP side, Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty's written talking points at a fundraising luncheon for corporate CEOs promised, quote, contact with influential government officials, cabinet president, next president, end quote, during the convention in St. Paul. And Stephen Weissman with the Campaign Finance Institute says this is a real problem. It's access with gratitude. That's just so wrong. 26 minutes.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here live from the Democratic National Convention, Pepsi Center. Boy, I'm reluctant to even say that. You know, it's like, the corporate plug. This should be a municipally owned, this should be like the Mile High Center or the Mile High City Center. I mean, what are we selling off everything in this country? It's and unless, I don't know, maybe Pepsi built the thing, in which case I suppose they get some credit for it. But I suspect it was more like naming rights, which is a whole different thing. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. By the way, after I get off the air here, I'm going to be debating conservative commentator Dennis Prager about the day's issues. This is put on by the Sea Change Ideas Forum. And for those of you in Denver who may be listening, it's at the Stars Green Room, part of the Tivoli Center. And then from 3 to 6, I'll be moderating the Progressives versus the Conservatives. There's going to be a series of panels, and I'll be moderating one of them. And on the panel will be Paul Krugman, Arianna Huffington, John Podesta, David Sirota, sponsored by Green Mountain Coffee Roasters. And when I can track it down, I'll give you the information on where I'll be next week. And our book signing. I don't have that right in front of me right at the moment, but I'll get to it. 866-303-2270, our telephone number, Charles in San Leandro, California. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to say that this is kind of our last opportunity to throw $25 at the Clinton campaign as part of the healing process, and then...
I agree, and particularly those folks who were her supporters. I mean, the best way to support her is not to bring down Barack Obama, it's to pay off her campaign debt.
Yeah, and then get ready for the big fight, because it's coming up. I hope people contribute to the Obama campaign. I'm sure going to do that. I started out as an Edwards supporter. His indiscretion doesn't upset me. I mean, sex is more natural than walking upright. Then I supported Hillary. Now I'm an Obama fan. Buy a hat. Their hats are cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
you got it,
Scott
Charles.
Obama. Okay. That's all the plugs.
Thanks.
I can get in.
All righty. You got it. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Howard in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Howard.
Yeah, I hope you don't cut me short. You kind of, not very often you give me any follow-up. But I want to talk about what I call, I've noticed over the years, the perception that the Democrats are wimps. And what I'm talking about is the no response to the Swift Boat people. They attack us. And we automatically go on defense. Why is it the Democrats don't go on offense? I'll give you a perfect example, Tom. In South Carolina, in the primaries, back in year 2000, the Bush people at the last second started floating rumors that McCain had mental trauma by being a POW for that amount of time and that he was not fit. Mentally fit to be president. And then they also dropped rumors that he had a mixed race child.
It wasn't dropping rumors. They actually mounted a push poll campaign, and they called at least 10,000 registered Republicans in the state. And this was something that was put together by Karl Rove. But Howard, I believe, and you know, thanks for your comments. I really believe that they are pushing back, and I think we saw the beginning of that with Joe Biden. Joe Biden saying, you know, which of his seven kitchen tables is John McCain going to sit around with his wife and discuss the family finances? You know, they spent $270,000 last year on butlers and maids, John and Cindy McCain, and he's thinking of putting Mitt Romney on the ticket with him, who's even, you know, at least twice and maybe four times as rich as John and Cindy McCain. You know, it's incredible. Terry in Los Angeles. Hey, Terry, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to just nip this Puma thing in the butt here. My mom is a delegate from Las Vegas. She was campaigning for Hillary. And I called her and I said, what are you guys doing? She's a union cocktail waitress. She's retired, 65. All her girls were out. And she said, believe me, if we were protesting Obama, they would have given me an email. They would have sent me the email. We'd be out there. There's no way they would vote for McCain. There's hardcore Democrat strong union gals, and I don't buy it.
Neither do I, broadly speaking, and I believe that the majority of the Clinton delegates are that way, but I'm telling you, there is a very active campaign, and I believe that it's being driven from behind by people who want McCain to win make the Clinton delegates feel like they've been dissed. And all you have to do is look at the Drudge Report.
They want a Democrat. Are not going to vote for McCain. And she said, I would have gotten an email. We would have been out there. And this is a group of hardcore cocktail waitresses, you know?
Yeah, there
so
you go.
I just wanted
Terry, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I absolutely hope that what you're saying is spot on. You know, I'm very optimistic and very hopeful about this thing, and I think perhaps it is overblown. James in Philadelphia, you think it is.
Yeah, no, just to echo what some of the people have said, I know I'm coming from a state that Hillary actually won in the primary, and I don't see any of this, anger over the fact that Obama won or people that are saying that they're gonna either not vote or vote for McCain. You know, I see tons of bumper stickers. I know people that were avid supporters of Hillary, going into the Pennsylvania primary who, you know, quickly said they're gonna vote for Obama now. I don't see anybody
that.
Well, maybe I'm just, you know, maybe it's because I'm in the media and I get so much of this email, you know, but there's a bunch of sites that have been created. And there's, you know, my friend Carolyn Kay, who I love dearly and I know is a progressive. She runs the site called MakeThemAccountable.com. And it's, I'm just, I watch all the Obama trashing going on there, and I'm thinking, you know, what, should we just vote for McCain? I mean, you know, is that the option? It's out there, and
I understand what you're saying, and I believe that that's true, and I believe that what you're saying is correct. That it is that the RNC is somehow behind something like that, but I don't think that it's accurate. I don't think what they're saying is accurate.
Stick.
I don't think that there's anyone that's really that upset. There may be a small percentage of the Clinton supporters that are upset about it, but they're by no means anything that's going to change anything when the election comes around in November.
Yeah. Let's hope not, James. Thank you very much for your comments. Len in New York. Hey, Len.
Hi. You know, my sister-in-law from New York was over a couple days ago or yesterday, and, you know, like, I think she had voted for Hillary, and she just said she's staying home. There are three things that Hillary has to say in her speech that's going to win over them all. And those three things are: the Republicans are lying to you about the discord. The second thing she has to say is, I lost to the best. And the third thing she has to say is, voting for John McCain would be the biggest political mistake you make in your life. And if she can get those three messages clearly across, then I think the 5% maybe would still not vote for Obama instead of staying home or voting for McCain.
Yeah. So your sister-in-law, she's not going to vote for Obama, even though
shrugged her shoulders and said, you know, I don't think I'm going to vote, you know. I mean, she just doesn't get how bad McCain can be. And, you know, she's a 60-year-old Jewish woman in New York who has no particular need for Obama's populism. She's got enough money not to worry about, you know, needing tax cuts. She just doesn't see the harm that McCain can do. And if anything you're going to vote for in this election, it's going to be voting against the harm McCain can do.
Yeah, very, very, very well said, Len. The harm that he can do on the Supreme Court, the harm that he can do by starting another war. This is a guy whose entire worldview is through the filter of war. He you know, just like George W. Bush, he believes that all conflicts are first resolved by threats, by bluster, and then by war. I mean, look at the bomb Iran, his tough talk on Georgia. I mean, it's dangerous. You're right. Scott in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hey, Scott.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to call, let you know I love the show, listen every day. I'm not so convinced of these polls that half of Clinton supporters are not going to support Obama, because it seems to me there's just no way they can accurately identify who is a Clinton supporter.
Yeah. Well, so you wonder how many of them are Republicans.
Yeah.
You know, just
so they call them and they, you know, they ask them, well, are you a Republican or a Democrat, or did you support Clinton? And People can say, oh, yeah, I supported Clinton, when they really didn't.
Yeah. Or they might have, as Republicans, just to try to, I mean, you know, there was Limbaugh's whole thing, you know, Operation
Right.
Chaos. That was all, you know, all Republicans.
Exactly.
And a lot of them actually voted for Hillary Clinton. So it's interesting. Scott, thanks for sharing that. Yeah, absolutely. Nancy in Minneapolis. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Tom. I just, your statement about our Republican Governor Pawlenty. He's acting like a pimp who is selling our Republican politician whores to the corporate johns. He's so blatant about it.
Isn't that kind of Republican 101, though, Nancy?
No kidding. Wow. We just can't wait for the Republican convention to come here. We just heard today that they're going to provide free medical care for protesters in St. Paul. So if the protesters twist an ankle or get tasered, they will get free medical care.
If you get tasered, you get free medical care. Well, and yeah, on the one hand, it's a subtle way of saying we're gonna injure you.
Right.
You know, that they're threatening physical violence.
Exactly.
And then there's also the incredible irony of Republicans offering free medical care to anybody.
I know. Yeah, isn't that the truth? Yeah.
It's like you know, bizarre.
Yeah.
Nancy, thanks a lot for the call. We're going to take a break. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be back with more of your calls, and we'll see. You know, we've got a number of guests who who may or may not show up. This is the general chaos that you see in these conventions. I love it. I think it's, you know, it's so spontaneous, and it's just great. So we'll see how it flows. And of course, we've got your calls on the line and the news of the day. We'll update you on all that. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here in Denver, the Democratic National Convention.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
Please welcome the presumptive Republican candidate for president, Senator John McCain.
My friends, if I'm elected, I'm gonna be getting on in years. I could be the oldest guy who's ever won. Hell, Ronald Reagan could be my son. Now look at the future, my second term. Think of what's in store. Now do you really want me running the country when I'm 84? Oh, there's gonna be some really sweet perks if I get the job. I will have advantages to get things done, like pre-boarding on Air Force One. And when I ask world leaders to dine, one thing is for sure, we never late night them, cause when I invite them, dinner's served at four. Every Easter Sunday, kids will Rolex at the White House, so I'll step outside and shout, hey kids, get on my
Old man yells at cloud, yes, 9 minutes before the hour. And just a reminder for our listeners in Denver, tomorrow night at Borders Books on Lone Tree, in Lone Tree, Colorado, in the Park Meadows Mall, I'll be doing a book signing, and it's at 6 p.m., yep, 6 p.m. at the Border Books at the Lone Tree in Lone Tree, Colorado. And there's more information at am760.net as well. But, be there or be square. Show up. And speaking of Denver, Howard in Denver. Hey, Howard, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I'm a senior citizen, very senior. Mm-hmm. I live in Denver. I live in Sunrise, Florida, and I have a place in Pennsylvania. Okay? Mm-hmm. So the groups that we talk to believe at this point, and the seniors, that most of the conventions are irrelevant. They mean nothing. It's a great way to party. It's a great way to have fun. But beyond that, the big thing here is what we talk about is getting rid of all of the senators before you'll do anything that'll make sense in this country. Most of them take money on the side. And they call it, you know, they need it. They don't need it.
Joe Biden they released his net worth. His net worth is $150,000.
I don't that's, feel that's, good. You know, that,
so, you know, how can you say this guy's on the take? I mean, you know, it's, you want to get rid of all the senators?
Yeah. Listen, that's a joke. We swear to God that these guys are the lying, cheating, most ridiculous people in the world.
Howard, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I just don't share your cynicism. Yes, I would agree. You got people like Billy Towson who pushed through Medicare Part D and then goes to work for pharma. In fact, gets a special dispensation so he can take his $2 million a year salary from them before his term is even up. You know, that should be illegal. And certainly there's a bunch of people like that, and the majority of them are Republicans. There are some Democrats like that. They need to be called out. They need to be exposed. But I don't believe that they're all like that. I really don't. And I believe that, you know, for example, Senator Barack Obama and Senator Joe Biden are good and honorable people and decent and very good politicians, frankly. So that's, anyhow, Bonnie in Burgettstown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Bonnie, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom. Your first guest responded to your hypothesis that the cons are deliberately lying to stir up fear about the Obamas with, well, then nothing will ever change. And I don't think that is an answer that justifiably responds to the immorality of the manufactured politics of personal destruction. So what do you think about Dems telling their story about how good American democratic liberal values make us wary of those kinds of politics, generally speaking, because we deeply understand that the well-being of communities at the local level and the well-being of our country and the entire world, for that matter, can't really survive if everyone participated in such deception? It's just morally wrong.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Bonnie, and that's the point that we need to be making, and you did it very well. Maureen in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hey, Maureen.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Actually, I'm newly in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I met you in Seattle, Washington, so I'm bringing another Democrat here to Arizona.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so in a similar vein, the fact that so many people are saying that they would vote for McCain if Obama had was the candidate and not Hillary, what I don't hear are things like the broader picture of why we need a Democrat and reclaiming our Constitution, having to do with international relations and respect around the world again, and having passing on the future for our children and their children and the environment and women's rights. I mean, they're talking about wanting a woman as president, but if we don't have a Democrat in office, then we're going to get more judges on the Supreme Court, justices on the Supreme Court, judges throughout the country, and even pharmacists who are going to take away women's rights and freedom. So I think there's a broader picture that the Democrats and Hillary, Senator Clinton, could be saying to the voters for those who feel disengaged because she isn't the candidate, to say that this is why it's important that we unite the broader picture.
And that was the point that Steve Hildebrand was making, the deputy campaign manager for Obama, mm-hmm. when he came on the program. And I think it's a point that needs to be made over and over.
Maureen, thank you
for the call. Yeah, absolutely. Jason, I'm sorry, we just have about 30 seconds here before we got to wrap up this hour. A quick point, Jason?
Yeah,
Washington, D.C.
You can probably, when you come back on, talk to me about the polls. I'm really scared about the polls. They're really, I can't believe they're tied.
You know what's going on here, Jason, is that the television media, particularly the television pundits, they have to have a horse race. They have to have the polls tight to maximize their profit. And so I'm telling you, what we are all going to see, and what we've seen so far, we saw this in the Clinton-Obama campaign, and you're going to see it now in the Obama-McCain campaign, is every time one or the other of them gets up, the media is going to run all, they're going to focus on the negative stories and hammer them down. And once either one of them starts falling precipitously, they're going to hammer on the positive stories and bring them back up to try and keep it a horse race. 57 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. From the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 6 minutes past the hour. And somebody just threw a window at me and I lost my screen. Sorry about that. Sitting opposite me is Congresswoman Donna Edwards. Donna, you are the U.S. Congresswoman from the 4th District of Maryland, and you're a recently minted Congresswoman, right?
That's right. I was sworn in on June 19th, and so I'm a short timer, the most freshman member of the United States Congress.
Well, congratulations and welcome. I mean, I can't say as a peer welcome, but it's great. I don't know what the appropriate welcome would be beyond that.
Welcome is good.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. First of all, in Maryland's 4th District, and broadly across the country, what's your sense of the issues that are really at play here? You, during the break, we were talking briefly, and you mentioned energy and the foreclosure crisis. Your sense is that these are the really big issues?
I think these issues, I mean, especially to the extent that they are deeply impacting our overall economy, are hitting people really hard. I mean, we've had massive job loss across the country in communities throughout the country, whether they were doing well or not. And Maryland is actually a relatively wealthy state, but we're facing tremendous numbers of foreclosures around our state, and that's impacting deeply into our economy, and that's certainly true across the country. I mean, Congress has had to act, but we may have to act again because it may not have been enough.
It seems to me that we are on the edge of something, that this may well be a 1929 kind of time right now. We had the, you know, starting with the dot-com bubble, you know, as our manufacturing base basically vanished as a consequence of 20 years of Reaganomics. We became a bubble economy. It was like there was just, you know, one thing after another, the dot-com bubble, you know, the housing bubble, the commodities bubble, you know, oil and gold and things. And now it seems like there's actually a credit bubble that, you know, we've been making up, middle-class Americans have been making up for our loss of wages by borrowing. And there's this, and the government has been making up for the lack of revenue ever since the Reagan tax cuts by borrowing. And so there's just this mind-boggling amount of debt out there. And if that pops, if we have a liquidity crisis, I mean, that liquidity crisis is the fancy phrase the economists used to describe what happened in 1929 through 1933.
Well, it is a really challenging time. I mean, I also think, you know, I mean, we have a lot of, you know, corporations across the country that have actually made tremendous profits, particularly over the last 8 years of the Bush administration, and yet wages have remained absolutely stagnant. It's not sustainable. And so, I'm excited. Actually, you know, we're here at the Democratic Convention. I'm really excited about the nomination of Barack Obama. I think that, you know, come January, we will have an opportunity to create some amazing transformation in this country and really do job creation and think about the jobs of the 21st century instead of building off of the old economy.
What are the things that, we're talking with Congresswoman Donna Edwards of Maryland's 4th District. What are the things that the Republicans threw against you when you were running? And to what extent do you see themes emerging, attack themes, or for that matter, even, you know, positive themes out of the Republican side? And how do the Democrats respond to this?
Well, you know, I really ran in a Democratic primary against a relatively conservative Democrat in our district, and I ran on a progressive agenda that was about living wages and universal health care and energy for the future, not about drilling, but about investing in alternatives. And our voters bought that, and I think that that's where voters across the country are right now, which is why this election is so important, because it really is not just an election about change, but what kind of change, and change that's really progressive change for the future.
Right. As I'm assuming you're a delegate, or a, if not a superdelegate, you would be a superdelegate, right?
It turns out that I am.
Yeah, but not also a delegate. Are there some who are actually some superdelegates who are also were elected and are representing one of the candidates?
Well, there are superdelegates who come from this array of members of Congress and other elected officials in our state or governor. And then we have regular elected delegates, and some of those happen to hold elective office locally.
I see. But so, there are no superdelegates who are also elected delegates.
No.
That would be really
front-loading.
That would be kind of... You know, I'm actually one of the few people who's in favor of the superdelegate program. I think that a political party is a club, essentially. And I like the idea of the people who have a long-term commitment and have put their lives on the line for the club and have given their lives to the club to have a little more say in the club than somebody who just joined yesterday.
Well, it turns out they don't actually have a little more say. I mean, it's a balance, right? So what we have is a system where we have a balance of elected delegates who come out of our primaries and our caucuses, and then that is balanced off with the superdelegates, people who have deeper knowledge, experience, and commitment to the party. And we've managed to strike that balance in conventions past, and we're going to strike it with this one and into the future.
We've seen some themes emerge, Congresswoman. We're talking with Congresswoman Donna Edwards of Maryland's 4th District. We've seen some themes emerge already. Joe Biden, in his acceptance speech, asking which of the 7 kitchen tables would John and Cindy be sitting around as they're discussing their household finances. That was, you know, Joe Biden has such a, you know, it's like the noun, the verb in 9/11, you know, where he just basically took down Rudy Giuliani. He's got such a way with words. What are the, in your opinion, what are the most effective of the themes and the memes, the thought viruses, the ideas that the Democrats are putting out and can put out, or maybe should put out and haven't, to take on John McCain directly and take on the Republican Party? We need a majority in the Senate as well. I mean, a supermajority.
Well, you know, if you look at our ticket, an Obama-Biden ticket is a ticket of working families and working people, folks who weren't handed something, but who really worked hard for it, who came from modest, very modest means, rose up, got their education, took care of their families, their children, and made a commitment to their communities. And that's the ticket we have, and it is one that's representative of America. And I know I saw that in my own election in the February primary, where the wave that was sweeping, the tidal wave that was sweeping across this country, was saying, we actually want to elect people who understand the folks who get up every day and go to work and work hard for their families for a living. And I think that the Obama-Biden ticket represents exactly that, the achievement of the American dream, and it's an exciting one.
You are personally, if I may suggest, at the confluence of the historic woman and the historic African-American, as an African-American woman yourself. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on the whole dynamic of gender and of race in the primary and in this election, and how in particularly the gender end of it might be playing out in some of the really effort that people like Drudge are putting into causing Hillary Clinton delegates to feel badly.
Well, I have deep roots as a longtime feminist working on issues of domestic violence and equality for women for, you know, 20 or so years. And when I get up in the morning, I am both an African-American and I'm a woman. And I feel that really deeply. And I feel incredibly proud that it was the Democratic Party that had the capacity to have these two candidacies rise to the fore. I mean, I think it's an amazing thing that speaks to who we are as Democrats and who we are as the American people. And so I know I don't feel badly. I mean, I have been a Barack Obama supporter from the beginning, but very proud of the efforts put forward by Hillary Clinton. And I'm the first African-American woman elected to Congress from the state of Maryland.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And so this year to me feels historic in so many different ways. We are breaking barriers all over the place, and the Obama ticket is one barrier, and the Hillary Clinton campaign for the presidency was another barrier, and it's exciting to be a Democrat in this kind of party that can have that kind of feel.
We saw in Tennessee, in Harold Ford Jr.'s race, naked racism being played. I think we saw sexism being played, you know, against Hillary Clinton. I don't think by the Obama campaign specifically, but it was certainly in the press. Do you think that we're past those things? I think we could probably agree we're not past those things as a country, that they're real and they're problems. But have we reached the point where, as Democrats, when the Republicans try to trot that stuff out, we'll be able to slap it down?
I think we've reached the point as Americans where, when that sort of thing rises, we'll be able to slap it down. I mean, I grew up in a military family. My father actually joined the Air Force in that first class of an integrated mm-hmm. Air Force.
Yeah.
And we've seen tremendous changes and challenges, you know, in this country. And I believe that as an American, we are so much better than the muck.
Yeah.
And this election is going to prove that.
Yeah, there you go. And there's plenty of muck and muck throwers out there, tragically. But I agree with you. I think that this is a watershed event, and it's actually transforming America, even as at the same time it represents the transformation that's happening at the same time. It's generative. Congresswoman Donna Edwards, Maryland's 4th District. Your website, DonnaEdwards.house.gov. Congresswoman, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, too, Tom.
Great talking with you. It's 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
Be a plan. I think it would be a plan we could all get behind. Change. And it's a great theme. Here, Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in the Mile High City in Denver, Colorado. Our telephone number, 866-303-2270. And let's see here, Karen in Alameda, California. Hey, Karen. Karen, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, this is directed at Hillary supporters who are now supporting McCain. And, of course, if it gets independence away from him, that's okay, too. You might remember that during the Clinton administration, McCain attacked Chelsea Clinton with a really, really vile joke. I hesitate to repeat it, but I think it's necessary. He said, "Why is Chelsea Clinton so ugly?" And the response was, "Because Janet Reno is her father." I don't understand how anyone who respects Hillary Clinton can support a man who is so vicious in attacking her child for political points.
Yeah. It's a point well made, Karen, and thank you very much. Yes, and it was a terrible joke. And John McCain, some of his comments about his own wife are a little scary. Deborah in Beaverton, Oregon. Hey, Deborah.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
The reason that I'm calling is twofold, because after listening to some of your other callers, there's been other points brought up. First of all, the Me First Democrats or Republican crossovers are very, very mm-hmm. concerned about themselves. And I have a girlfriend in Texas who voted for the changeover in Congress in 2006, and she believes all of the talking heads about the do-nothing Congress that got elected and doesn't take into consideration the minimal majority vote that we have and the amount of filibusters. Why?
Well, and if the Republicans...
Well, she doesn't go educate herself. And not only that, the one thing that we have to take into consideration, whether we want to deal with it or not, is that if you say something long enough and loud enough, the certain portion of the American public who don't want to have to go refute it will just start to believe it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And, Trent Lott laid this out. Trent Lott said two years ago, that the Republican strategy for the U.S. Senate was that they were going to obstruct any meaningful legislation on the part of the Democrats. Once the Democrats took control of the Senate, they were going to obstruct any meaningful legislation in the Senate because they could do it with a filibuster, and then they were going to run in 2008 on a campaign of a do-nothing Congress. And the Democrats knew this. They were warned. Trent Lott bragged about it in the press, and you are absolutely right. And what boggles my mind is that Harry Reid walked right into it. Said, "Okay, that's what you're going to do. I'll go along with that." And it just blows my mind. It's such a lack of political theater, enough on that, eh? Alex in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Alex.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on? What's
I just
on?
Have a quick question. Is it possible for our candidates to run a campaign that is based on issues rather than attacking the other on how many houses they own or where they vacationed?
No. No, it's not possible. And the reason why is because those things, you know, how many houses they own, where they vacation, those speak to who the person is.
Yeah.
And in America, you know, with our elected representatives, it's not quite as big a deal, although it still is a big deal because it tells you something about the person and how they might vote and how they might represent you. But in the presidency here, Alex, we have synthesized both the and thanks for your call and your comments, both the head of state and the head of government. Most countries split these functions apart. In the United Kingdom, the head of government is Mr. Brown, is the Prime Minister. The head of state is the Queen. So, and in other countries, in Israel, the head of state is the president, the head of government is the prime minister. It's that way in most countries. All around the Middle East, you've got kings who are heads of state, and in many cases, you've got prime ministers who are the heads of government, although very often it's all in one. But here in the United States, we combined both those functions in one person. And so we've got one guy who's out there representing us, who is essentially our surrogate king. He's our, or queen, as, you know, had it been Hillary Clinton. And that person embodies both the head of state aspect. In other words, we want them to be a good policy wonk. We want them to know what's going on. We want them to be able to discuss the issues intelligently. We want them to have passionate and strongly held positions and really understand things. But we also want them to be a good head of state. We want to see the kind of thing, frankly, that we saw with Barack Obama in Germany, where other countries in the world look at that person and go, yes, this is a statesman. This is somebody who represents us well. This is somebody we're proud of. I don't think we want somebody who says, hey, yeah, bomb, 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 another sovereign country. You know, bomb Iran. I mean, it's John McCain, even if you agreed with his politics as a head of government, I think would make a lousy head of state, frankly. 27 minutes past the hour, and I think Barack Obama was a great
one. This is the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
Congress on the minimum wage and see how long they can last. Let them try to rely on the minimum wage and see them change it, rearrange it, wow, real fast. And when they say that the pay makes it tough to survive, we're telling them, hey, it keeps you alive. When they cry that they try, but they can't get ahead, we'll send a social worker to pat them on the head. They'd be poor, but I'm sure it would
maybe
be
Congress
all
should
the
work on the live on the minimum wage. I don't think so, but I don't think anybody should live on. We need to raise the minimum wage. Come on, let's make it a living wage. You know, let's take Teddy Roosevelt's phrase. 35 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and sitting here with me. And by the way, you can see this at on our Tom Vision camera over at airamerica.com and also tomhartman.com is a button up at the top there, is Jamal Simmons. He's a political strategist and media consultant. He's the president of New Future Communications. He was press secretary to Senator Bob Graham and to General Wesley Clark's presidential campaigns and former communications director to Senator Max Cleland. Jamal, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Very glad to have you with us.
And now I'm an advisor to the Obama campaign.
And now an advisor to the Obama campaign.
Yep.
Great, thank you. I'd like to ask you about Max Cleland's campaign for just a second,
sure.
If you don't mind.
Yeah.
I lived in Georgia, in Atlanta for 13 years, and grew up in Michigan. In fact, I lived in Detroit for a while, where you're originally from.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're both familiar with some of the same terrain here. And that was the first election, you know, when he lost to Saxby Chambliss, who was a draft dodger,
yep.
And who ran and here's a guy, Max Cleland, a guy who left three limbs in Vietnam. I mean, yep. And Saxby Chambliss ran ads that included pictures of Osama bin Laden, followed by pictures of Max Cleland. I mean, it was just, but the polls and the Atlanta Constitution Journal pointed this out. Cox pointed this out. I mean, there was no shortage of this. Is all you can Google this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The polls, right up to the day of the election, showed that Cleland was going to beat Chambliss by about 4 points.
Yeah.
The exit polls showed he beat him by 4 points.
Yeah.
And the polls the day afterwards showed that he beat him by 4 points. It was the first election that was done entirely with electronic voting machines, no paper trail, and the result of the election was the exact opposite. Chambliss beat Cleland by about 4 points. To the best of your knowledge, did Max Cleland ever question or contest that in public, and was his staff as fried about that as a lot of us were?
Well, if you actually look at, there's an alternative theory. What the Republicans will tell you, and I actually sort of believe this, is that we had The gap had closed to about 2 points about a week out. It expanded back to 6 points about Wednesday before the election day. But George Bush came in there on Friday or Saturday, and they saw that number close again to zero by Tuesday in their overnight tracking poll. The other thing that happened, and this is what the Democrats are doing now, is Ralph Reed, who's the chairman of the Republican Party down in Georgia at that point, they put a phenomenally effective ground game together. They did field organizing like you wouldn't believe. So people were polling likely voters, who were likely voters or people who had voted in the last election or the election before the last election. They were not voting people who had never voted before. And what the Republicans did, they went out and found a bunch of Republicans in rural counties to show up and vote who nobody was expecting to vote. And so on Election Day, what we saw was a swarm of people show up and vote on Election Day that nobody had any sense were going to show up.
Yeah.
So I think that may have as much of an impact. Now, I'm not going to sit here and defend electronic voting machines. I think they do have problems. But I think we definitely saw a very effective field organization that took place.
Well, thank you for that.
The Obama campaign is doing now is really going back, and Democrats have learned how to do field again. And we saw it in the primaries. They're going county by county, town by town, finding voters, pulling them onto the voting rolls, and going to turn them out on Election Day.
I understand that the state of Ohio is about to knock 600,000 people off the voting rolls, that they're doing a big purge of their voting rolls. We're seeing this all around the country, you know, kind of caging but done legally. At the same time, the Republican Party is training an army of lawyers and even of volunteers who are being trained in election law so that they can stand at the polls and challenge anyone who apparently, you know, based on how they look or in certain polling districts, just knowing these are predominantly Democratic districts because they're voting there, just challenge everybody in sight. And you've got some states like Indiana that make it really, really easy with their ID requirements. How, you know, the Kerry campaign promised us that they were going to take this stuff on, that they were going to take names and kick ass, that they were going to, that they were going to stop the disenfranchisement of voters, and they were going to promote the enfranchisement of voters. And they, as far as I can tell, they didn't do a particularly good job of either. And certainly after the election, I mean, there's still over 100,000 ballots in Ohio from the 2004 election that have not yet been opened. You know,
wow.
I mean, Kerry just walked away from that. And what assurance do we have that's not going to happen again, damn it?
Well, I'll tell you, we're actually focusing on this on the front end.
Yeah.
This is not a conversation we want to have for 2 weeks in November after Election Day.
Right.
So the one person who's really focused on this is Donna Brazile. And Donna's been leading this voter protection effort inside the DNC. And so what we do know now is we know where irregularities have occurred in the past. We've been engaging in those places and talking to the people who are in charge of the voting rolls in those places.
Right.
And the other thing we're doing is we're encouraging people, places where they have early vote, to show up and vote the first day as possible for you to vote. If you're gonna absentee ballot vote, request your absentee ballot early. That way, if there's a problem, you know about that problem before Election Day. It makes it much harder for people to take your vote or not count it if you vote early or you apply for your absentee ballot early and you don't get it a week before Election Day. You can go down there and straighten this mess out before the voting starts.
Or the situation that we saw in 2004 in Ohio, and actually it was going on all over the country, where in heavily Democratic districts, you had nowhere near enough voting machines.
That's
people
right.
were waiting in line 10, 12 hours. And
there's no technician there. There's a problem.
Right.
There's
and in Republican districts, seniors. It's a 20-minute wait.
Right.
So what are we doing?
One thing we're doing is, again, we're trying to get people to go out and vote early. The second thing that we're doing is there'll be, I think we're going to see such a tremendous spirit of people wanting to vote. We're going to have all sorts of entertainment and people who are standing in line, and we're going to focus on the places that are high concentration to make sure they have more people, more workers. You know, this entire effort that's been in place really for a couple of years, people have been focusing on this. I think we're going to see a much more aggressive effort out of the party this time.
We're talking with Jamal Simmons, a consultant to the Obama campaign and you know, a longtime political hand. The guy has been around the block with a few campaigns here over the years. Jamal, how do you push back when the Republicans, you know, what's your advice to our listeners who may find themselves in a situation where they show up at the poll and some guy gets in their face and says, let me see your ID, or, you know, prove to me that you're actually who you say you are. Or even when they do, I mean, if they do pull out the driver's license and say, see, here I am, person says, you know, I don't think that you're legally qualified to vote, and I'm going to challenge your vote. even if you're on the rolls. Even, I mean, they have the right to do this.
You have the right to vote, and if they won't let you, if they won't let you vote the normal way, you can get a provisional ballot.
But these are like placebo ballots. I mean, the provisional ballots are the ones in Ohio that haven't been counted yet.
Yeah, but, you know, we're going to focus on that. But you do not have to leave. Pick up the phone, call the number. There'll be lots of numbers. People, as you walk in the door, you'll see Obama campaign workers out there. They'll have the number of where to call if you have a problem. There are lawyers standing by in every single city. You do not leave that place until you vote.
Right. Okay. Jamal Simmons with us, a political strategist and consultant to the Obama campaign. What is being done to within the Obama campaign to not just bring in the Hillary Clinton voters? Mm-hmm. That's pretty obvious. But to push back on the Republican efforts. I mean, I just looked at Drudge.
Yeah.
And right up there, there's a picture of, you know, it says unity kind of ironically, and there's a picture of Barack Obama, and behind him an unhappy picture of Hillary Clinton. For 4 days, they have been pounding this idea that Barack Obama is intentionally dissing Hillary Clinton, and by extension, intentionally dissing all of her delegates and all of her supporters. How do we... point out that this is a Republican strategy intended to divide the Democratic Party? I mean, it is.
Well, we just can't get fooled by it. The reality is that Hillary Clinton's been showing up. She's now campaigning for Barack Obama all over the country. We saw her in Florida by herself recently. We saw her out in Nevada campaigning for Barack Obama. We'll see. Barack Obama's been extraordinarily generous to her. They're going to have a roll call vote, and they're going to put her name in nomination. They're raising money for Hillary Clinton. These two people are working together for Democrats to win and to beat John McCain. The reality is that Barack Obama wants to have tax credits for people who are trying to go to school. He wants to give tax breaks to people who, 95% of Americans will get a tax break in a Barack Obama administration. Meanwhile, we've got John McCain out here who is wants to tax our health care benefits. You know, who ever heard of such a thing? His idea of health care reform is to tax employer-paid health care benefits and then to deregulate health care so that it's only going to be regulated in the state where the health care insurer is. So you know what's going to happen then? It's going to be just like a credit card company. Yeah. If you like your...
like three national insurers left.
Exactly. And not only that, then they're going to move to some state that has low regulation, and then they're going to be in that state, and then nobody's going to be able to get health care insurance. Under the John McCain plan, he wouldn't be covered for health care because of his pre-existing conditions.
You're right. We need to point that out over and over and over again. Jamal Simmons, we're going to wrap up this segment right now. Jamal Simmons, political strategist and media consultant and consultant with the Obama campaign right now. And thank you so much for...
Thanks very much, Tom. Good to be here.
Great to meet you. I know you have another show that you've got to be on in a minute here. I just got the cue from the guy with you. Have a great one. Thanks, Jamal. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you live from the Democratic National Convention. Stick around. We'll be right back. 866-303-2270, TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com. Tom Fish is playing. Yeah. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
When I was a child, with my heart in my hand, I pledged my allegiance to the flag of this land, where Kennedy was killed in a Texas cow town, and we learned how to hide from the bomb underground. So when the things that you tell me don't match what you do, I'd be a fool not to have a huge problem with you. And I'll still stand and fight for this land of the free. First we'll take back the ground that we lost in D.C.
Yeah, it's a Ronald Reagan.
So stand and
welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Live from Denver, the DNC, and joining me right now, one of my dear friends, Stephanie Miller.
Oh, please. You say that to all the dumb girls to make them feel better.
Nationally syndicated talk show. One of the, actually, one of the Aww. Very top rated.
Thank you, baby. Back at ya.
Yeah.
Back at ya.
We're having a good time here. So what's your sense of, you know, the party town here?
It's, well, as you know, I'm drunk already, but I normally am when I run into you. But I, yeah, it's exciting, isn't it? The excitement is starting to build. Ted Kennedy's going to be here tonight.
I heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm hoping he's...
I know,
well,
I know,
better, you know,
I know, but that's going to be emotional. Michelle Obama's big speech, so I think, I'm just hoping we get some unity. The Hillary people are a little raw on the phones this morning.
Is that,
yes.
You look at Drudge today, and they've got a picture of Hillary looking sad and Obama looking, I mean, it's like Drudge has been for the last 4 days just pounding this meme of Obama is dissing her.
Yeah, and well, that's the first McCain ad. Is,
yeah.
Oh, she. Why didn't they pick her for telling the truth? I'm like, what?
Yeah, I mean, this is crazy.
Apparently, this is new to them, that whoever wins the primary gets to pick whoever they feel comfortable governing with. I guess that's a new thing this year.
Well, apparently for Republicans, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and which is interesting. I mean, maybe there's a lot of backroom stuff going on in the McCain campaign.
Right.
Any sense of that? I've been betting on Romney for
Yeah, it's going to be Romney. I think that was totally a head fake. It's like, you know, we might pick a pro-choice. Just kidding. Okay, the Mormon's not so bad, is he?
You're right. Exactly.
Yeah. That's it, right, for the religious right.
Exactly. Amazing. So what's your guess? I mean, your listeners, the folks here, you know, you've got a good ear to the ground, Stephanie
right.
Miller. What's your guess on what's going to happen on Wednesday?
Wednesday meaning Bill Clinton or?
Wednesday, Bill Clinton, and when Hillary releases her delegates. Well, Tuesday night, too.
Oh, it's like born free when the delegates go free. I'm already tearing up. Elsa and all the other delegates will go free on Wednesday, Tom. I really hope that we're going to have some. Some actual unity instead of just, you know, talking about it. But I think it's going to be how people feel like if, you know, Bill and Hillary Clinton really come from the gut with what they say, if they really have their heart in it. You know, they're going to say the right things, but I think it'll just be whether people buy it and whether people really, because I can't imagine people that really say they revere Hillary and vote, you know, supported her, how they could vote for John McCain in the end.
Yeah,
he stands against everything she stands for.
This is going to be a real gut check.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd like to just seriously for a moment. I mean, you're
yes.
just really. Your dad was one of the prosecutors at Nuremberg.
Yes.
In addition to being on the ticket with Barry Goldwater.
Right.
You know, when I was 13 years old, I went door to door for your dad. You know.
Wow, you were always a geek then.
Yeah, I really was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was. You know, pocketbook.
And I love that about you.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I am of the opinion that what we are seeing right now and what we've been watching for the last 6 years, 7 years, are war crimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And
I do too.
You've had, I know you weren't there when he was a prosecutor at the Nuremberg
right.
trials, but certainly you probably heard the stories better than anybody you know,
right.
I've ever met.
Right.
How do you think this might play out? My sense is that in the next 15 to 20 years, we're going to actually see war crime prosecutions.
Yeah, I do too. And I remember, Tom, when people first started saying that early on, I kept thinking, oh, that's a little extreme. That's a little, you know, I think before we really, you know, I mean, pick anything, the Ron Suskind book. I mean, there's been so much, you know, with the stuff Scott McClellan has said. I mean, there's been so much evidence that's come out since then that when people first started saying it, you're going, oh, well, that's kind of extreme. But, you know, for right-wingers to still go on TV and say, oh, well, we all just got it wrong. We just got the intelligence wrong. Like, they're just ignoring all the evidence that has been put forward that they didn't get it wrong.
Yeah.
They deliberately lied. They deliberately, you know, misconstrued the
intelligence. They deliberately tortured people. And frankly, I think that these are tools of terror that are being used against Americans as well.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I think that they want people to know that they could be disappeared, that
right.
they could be tortured.
Right. I've said this, that, you know, I mean, if we don't hold them accountable through our process, which is impeachment, I can't imagine how the world can't someday. You can't just start an illegal war.
Yeah.
You can't, based on lies, and just think maybe the world will just
Reagan
go all
did it with Grenada. You know, it just didn't go all that bad.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
If Grenada had turned into,
right.
you know,
right.
some kind of multi-year meltdown.
Right.
But
right. Yeah, I don't know how this is all going to come. I mean, you know, I'm sure you had a Bugliosi on with his book about prosecuting
times.
Him
yeah.
for murder. I mean, you know, that's the interesting thing. And you think, oh, that sounds so extreme. But when you really hear the evidence, you're like, well, it's really not,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah, no,
so I don't know in what court he's gonna get his case. But we'll see.
What are the things you're most looking forward to here at the DNC?
Well, I mean, obviously Obama's speech, you know, I mean, Thursday night, I think is just going to be, is going to be amazing. But, you know, all of it, honestly, like, I just think, you know, Al Gore speaking, Bill Clinton. I mean, we have such a superstar lineup, you know, Michelle Obama, I'm looking forward to tonight. Hillary, I just think the whole thing is going to, you know, I'm hoping is going to bring us to that unity that we talked about.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a touching story of Democratic unity?
Please.
Randy Rhodes just fell on the way in here and skinned her knee.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and I got her the two cutest paramedics to come in and take care of her.
Oh, that's great.
She thought they were Chippendales dancers. That's love. That is love, my friend.
Yeah, I saw her when she came in.
They did. They, like, licked her knee clean and bandaged it. And
yeah.
It's yes.
Nice to see her. It's like, you know, it's really weird. Here we're sitting in a room with probably half of the world conservative hosts in the
yeah,
world.
Yeah, I see Steve Malzberg behind you, and I'm getting a tick in my eye. Can you see that? And I see Al Sharpton over there.
Yeah. and it's really, you know, nice guys. You know, Jack Rice is over here.
Yes.
You know, they're kind of in the middle. There's
right.
You know, Jack and I went to Africa together.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, back in March.
Yeah, some of them are sane, the right-wingers. It's weird.
Yeah, and well, actually, Jack, I don't know what he is. He's kind of down the middle kind of guy.
Right, right.
But it's like the progressives are here, the conservatives are here.
I know.
Should we like go out and get some whipped cream pies or something?
Something. I don't know. Neil Bortz and I are going drinking later. I don't know. It's weird what's happening this week.
Yeah. You guys did a debate in Europe, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We went to London and England together and did the left-right thing.
How did that work out?
I was wildly popular and he was booed. How do you think it worked out?
You know, I spoke at Oxford University 5 years ago. And before, it was like 150 students and professors and things. And before they would let me speak, kids were heckling me from the audience. They forced me to apologize for George Bush before they would let me speak. I had to disavow him and apologize for him.
You feel like you have to overseas. I didn't vote for him. It's not my fault.
Yeah, right. You know, it's incredible. Stephanie Miller.
Tom Hartman.
Thanks so much. Yeah, good. We'll be right back.
This is Tom Hartman. From the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado, this is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour. Phil Angelides is with me. Am I pronouncing it right, Phil?
You got it, Tom.
I thought so.
I've been called worse.
Yeah, Phil Angelides, he's the chairman of the Apollo Alliance. For 8 years, he was the treasurer for the state of California, ran for governor of California as the Democratic nominee in 2006.
Got that silver medal, but I didn't get on the podium.
Yeah, well, that was some tough opposition. You have, pulling together this Apollo Alliance thing. First, broad stroke.
Okay, let's talk about the
Apollo Alliance.
The Apollo Alliance is a national coalition, an unusual coalition of folks all committed to a uniquely American agenda. We are a coalition of environmental leaders, labor leaders, progressive business leaders, and social justice leaders, all committed to building a clean energy, good jobs economy for America. We take our name, the Apollo Alliance, after what John Kennedy did in 1961 when he committed to send a man to the moon within 10 years. And we believe if America makes investments in its industries, its peoples, and its communities, we can build a clean energy economy. We can create 5 million new jobs. We can free ourselves from foreign oil. We can deal with the climate crisis. And we can usher in an era of broad-based economic prosperity.
In Oregon, we have a wind farm going up, and the windmills are made in Denmark. We have a friend of mine in Germany. Germany is, you know, covering their roofs with solar panels. I mean, it's just incredible what they've done, enough to not have to build two nuclear power plants. And yet, the last time I was over there, I said, where are you buying your solar panels from? And he says, we used to buy them from a company in France that was the largest manufacturer in Europe. The Chinese came over, they bought the company, they literally labeled every brick, took the factory apart, shipped it to China, rebuilt it, and they're now being made in China. It's like, how do we do this and not reinvent the mistakes of the past while we're trying to reinvent a new future?
Well, first of all, we can do it and we have to do it. I mean, we are, as you know, both McCain and Obama talk about, sending $700 billion a year overseas to buy oil from regimes deeply hostile. We all know that climate change is a real and imminent threat. We've seen what $4 gasoline's done to working families who can barely make their ends meet. So we have to do this. There isn't a question. And if we, in our view, commit $50 billion a year to research and development, reindustrialization, worker training in this country, that's, by the way, about a third of what we're spending each year in Iraq, we can build a clean energy economy. And I think what's very important is that we need to make sure it's also made in America. There is no point in going to a clean energy economy if, in the future, instead of being dependent on foreign countries for oil, we're now dependent on foreign countries for all the component parts, the windmills, the turbines, all the component parts that make up a clean energy
economy. So we need a rational trade policy to go along with it.
Absolutely. And if we're going to invest American dollars, we need to make sure it creates American industry and American jobs. But, you know, a lot of this can be done here and stay here. Let me give you an example. 70% of our electricity is consumed by buildings. 40% of the carbon emissions in this country come from buildings.
And the balance being what? Transportation?
Well, transportation and industrial sources.
Okay.
But just take the built environment. If we undertook a massive program to retrofit buildings to be energy efficient in this country, we could create hundreds of thousands of jobs, cut our electricity consumption, cut electricity bills for families and businesses. And those are jobs that cannot and will not be exported. I'll give you another example. Public transportation. We need a significant investment in public transit in American cities. Again, jobs that will stay here, that will benefit Americans. If we commit $200 billion in investments to public transportation, it will create about 1.5 million jobs, jobs that will not leave this country. Let's take the auto industry. We need to rebuild the American auto industry and make it a place where we build the next generation cars. And if we retrain workers, retool those industries, make them competitive again, we can do it.
And you know, it's interesting. In the Lexus and the Olive Tree, Tom Friedman went to a Lexus factory in Japan and saw these incredibly modern cars being made. This is like 93, I think it was. And then on the train, you know, back to his hotel, he's sitting on the bullet train and he's reading the International Herald Tribune about how they're fighting over olive trees in the Middle East, and he gets this epiphany that if they just made cars in the Middle East, they wouldn't fight anymore and everybody should take on the golden straitjacket and become neoliberals, you know. But the reality is that when the Toyota Loom Company in the 1930s decided to start making cars, they were entirely subsidized by the government. That they tried to sell a car in the United States, the Toyopad, in 1961, when, by the way, a year when the average income, the median income in Japan, was under $1,000 US in today's dollars. Japan was a poor country in 1960. And Korea was even farther behind. Their median income was under $300. But the government, MITI, stepped in, the Ministry of Industry and Trade, and said, we're going to subsidize this company. We're going to help create these jobs. We're going to develop this industry because it's the best thing, not for Toyota, for Japan. And the Lexus is the result of everything that Tom Friedman trashes in his book. And I don't think he, you know, bothered to do the research. It just blows my mind. But, you know, the conservative pushback on what you just said is always going to be, you know, let industry do that. Let companies do that. But the fact of the matter is that if that's the only answer, they're just going to go where the labor's cheapest, and we're going to be.
But the real story of America, of course, at its greatest moments is when it became an industrial power. It wasn't just industry.
Right.
Take the Civil War. 600,000 Americans dying on the battlefield of disease. That's when Lincoln charters the Transcontinental Railroad.
Yep.
Subsidized enterprise that made a national economy. It's when Lincoln signed the Land Grant Act that created hundreds of colleges across this country that trained workers for the 20th century.
Really?
It's when he signed the Homestead Act that gave government land that was, you know, in a sense, government subsidy to millions of people to make them property owners.
Right.
The New Deal, obviously, America on its knees. Fascism marching across the globe.
And marching around in the United States, too, by the way.
Right, and that's when Roosevelt mobilizes the capital and the public resources of America to get us going again. It's what Kennedy did with the Apollo mission. And just to make this bipartisan, in the 1950s, Eisenhower pushed through the Interstate Highway Act.
Oh, Dwight Eisenhower was one of the best Democratic presidents who was never a Democrat.
Hey, but if you, you know, you and I look like we're about the same age, you know, there was a whole set of government initiatives during the Cold War to make us competitive with Russia.
Yeah.
The Apollo space program. The National Defense Education Act. Those were scholarships, financial assistance, so kids could go to college and we could have the best trained workforce in the world. And it's time to do it again. And by the way, I believe this is a central issue in this campaign. And Barack Obama gets this. Mm-hmm. He's committed substantial political capital running ads saying this is what America needs to do. And it is a big dividing point in this election.
That's great. Phil Angelides, he's the chairman of the Apollo Alliance. What is the Apollo Alliance in terms of structure? Who has come together to form
okay,
what?
Good. Well, first of all, I want everyone to go to our website, apolloalliance.org. It's a great place to learn about how America is going to make this transition to the clean energy economy. And by the way, we are launching a new initiative, the New Apollo Program, which is a five-point initiative to create the clean energy economy that we hope to have build a popular movement to get the new president and Congress to embrace in 2009. But if you look at our structure, we have a board. And we have labor leaders, people like Leo Gerard from the steelworkers and Terry O'Sullivan from the laborers. We have environmental leaders like Carl Pope from the Sierra Club and Francis Beinecke, who heads the Natural Resources Defense Council. We have progressive business leaders like Ellen Powell, who's one of the leading venture capitalists in the Silicon Valley. We have people like Van Jones from Green for All. We are a coalition.
These are members of a board of directors?
Board of directors.
Okay. And it's a nonprofit corporation?
Absolutely. And what's unique about Apollo is we've got labor, environmentalists, business leaders, social justice leaders all coming together to really confront the triple threat of oil dependency, climate change, and the loss of good-paying jobs in America.
Yeah. And what role... Phil Angelides, do you see yourself as a midwife? I mean, is this something that you're hoping to birth through government, or do you see the Apollo Project, our alliances, turning into something larger?
Well, here's what we have done to date. Because we've had these two guys named George Bush and Dick Cheney in the White House, Washington's been frozen.
Yeah.
So for the past several years, what the Apollo Alliance has done is worked with a whole set of state and local alliances in California, in Oregon, in Washington, in Pennsylvania, to put together local initiatives to create green jobs. For example, we worked in Pennsylvania with Governor Rendell to bring wind turbine manufacturers and renewable energy industries into Pennsylvania, creating over 3,000 jobs. In places like Washington and Oregon, we've pushed for biofuels programs and renewable portfolio standards. So we've been very active at the ground level, green collar job training programs. But now we want to take this national level. We want to build a national popular movement to support the clean energy, good jobs agenda. We want to make sure the next president and Congress knows that progressives and people across America expect them to act big in 2009 on this agenda.
That's absolutely great. It's absolutely great. Where does your funding come from?
Foundations,
so you do a lot of
well-minded individuals,
yeah.
But foundations and forward-thinking individuals.
So the way that individuals, that our listeners can support what you're doing is by pushing your agenda, not by sending a $25 check.
They can do both. You can go to the apolloalliance.org. It's a great place, first of all, to join this movement, see what we're doing, seeing what's happening in your own community that you can link into. Mm-hmm. But, for example, there's a great weekly blog that tells you what's going on on this fight across the country. There's a daily digest. It's a great resource, apolloalliance.org. And yes, we need both your energy and financial support.
Great. Phil Angelides, thanks so much for being with us, Phil.
Thanks, Tom.
Apolloalliance.org. Great project. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver, Colorado.
Denver around Barack Obama, 22 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from Denver. Our program brought to you in part by the Teamsters. We're very pleased to have Teamsters as a sponsor. Promoting the Employee Free Choice Act, you can read all about it over at Teamster, singular, .org. Teamster.org. Check it out. With me now, sitting here with me, and you can see it on our TomVision cam.
It's amazing.
Yeah, go over to AirAmerica.com. You can actually see the pictures of it. Free video. Congressman Phil Hare is with us, serving the 17th District of Illinois. You're on the Education and Labor Committee and on the Veterans Affairs Committees.
Correct.
And you mentioned before the break that you were one of the first guys to have a fundraiser in your home for Barack Obama when he first announced that he was going to run.
For the United States Senate.
For the United States
Senate.
Yeah,
it was awesome. I had about 80 people at my house say, who's this guy? I said, just come, just listen to him a little bit, and bring your checkbooks, and, you know, he spoke for like 15 minutes, and everybody starts writing checks out. I wish I could do that.
Now, at that time, he was a state senator.
State senator. And I worked for Congressman Lane Evans at the time and came out early. It was like a five-person primary, but he was just amazing. You know, he's an amazing man, and you know, people listened to him, and it was like, holy cow, this guy's, you know, they kept saying, he's just such a, he's so smart, he's such a real deal guy, and I said, yeah, he's great.
Yeah, an acquaintance of mine, a friend of mine, was, I think, running in that primary, Nancy, and she just was like, this guy's incredible. Yeah. And so, what first, I mean, you were one of the early people there, you did this, what first caused you to support Barack Obama? I mean, you know, why, you know,
I'm consider myself a progressive, and he was, you know, in the state senate, he had a great voting record for progressives, and I met him a couple times down there, but just, you know, we've had an electorate that's been left out here for a long time, and, you know, he brought a lot of enthusiasm, still does, obviously, a lot more, but just, you know, his knowledge of the issues, this is a very smart guy.
Yeah.
And so I kind of laugh when McCain says he doesn't get it, you know, McCain could maybe learn a few things from Barack, but his enthusiasm, his willingness to be able to just reach out and talk to different types of people about issues. And, you know, this is a country that's got a lot of problems. And when he ran for the Senate, you know, Illinois had been hit with a lot of job losses and things, and, you know, was good on that stuff. So, you know, I came out of the labor movement, too. So his work with the steelworkers was important for me as a trade unionist, too. So, you know, it was a great fit, and he's been a great senator, and he'll be a great president.
We're talking with Congressman Phil Hare, serving the 17th District of Illinois. His website, hare.house.gov, H-A-R-E. And Congressman, Education and Labor, Veterans Affairs, between the two of these, I think we've got, I mean, labor in this country, ever since Ronald Reagan declared war on the working man and woman in this country, you know, busting PATCO, going after unions, turning the Department of Labor from an advocacy agency into a let's help the Chamber of Commerce figure out how to destroy good jobs. And McCain repeatedly voting against programs that would support and help our veterans when they come back.
Oh, absolutely.
And yet the Republicans are running and have been running for 30 years now as if they are like the party of the average guy and the party that supports the military. I don't get how they've been able to pull this thing off.
Well, they get a message and they say it's very succinct, like drill, drill, drill on this whole energy stuff they're talking about. Like with veterans, you know, we need to support our vets. Except, you know, John McCain didn't support the GI Bill that we passed out of our committee and came out of the Senate. And President.
Although Fox News reported that he did, you know.
Well, if Fox News says he did, then check their sources. But the point is, you know, here one of the things Barack did, too, he had a moratorium on these personality disorders for vets that they were misdiagnosing. As having pre-existing conditions, so they were denied their disabilities.
Right.
I didn't hear a peep out of McCain. And, you know, we have a bill on the House side that I put in. And, you know, when you take a look at it, these guys are all talking about we need to, you know, take care of our troops and support our troops. They just don't want to put any money behind it. It doesn't matter whether it's veteran suicide, whether it's GI Bill.
Yeah.
I sit on that committee, and these guys were always saying, well, I don't know how we can afford to do it. I said, that's not the question. The question is, how can you afford not to do it? You put them in harm's way, take care of when you bring them back.
So, I think their definition of support the troops is throw them into a war.
Well, at all, yeah, it's that's how you want to support them. But, you know, we have 1,000 veterans a month in this nation that are attempting suicide, some successfully.
Wow.
And you get the DA, with John McCain's buddies, who say we're going to be refrigerator magnets and advertise on the side of city buses to help solve that problem. They don't get it. And, you know, on the ed and labor, you know, employee free choice, I heard you talk about that earlier.
Yeah.
The single biggest issue for working men and women and trade unionists, you know, this country is what it is because of labor. Without them,
Amen.
For a less country.
Amen. Congressman Phil Hare.
Thank you.
Hare, H-A-R-E dot house.com.
Thank you.
More information.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Having me.
Thank you, Congressman.
Okay.
16.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the DNC in Denver, Colorado.
John McCain spent $270,000 last year on butlers and maids. A little bit of a contrast there. It's 34 minutes past the hour. It's 2:30. Where is it? 2:34. It's 12:34 here in Denver. It must be 2:34 in New York. I've got dueling computers. It's computer clocks. Well, you run into the strangest people at the Democratic National Convention, and one of my absolute favorite human beings on earth, Jim Dean. The president of, are you president, executive director, Big Cheese? What's your official title, Jim?
Chairman,
that's right. I remembered it was something that I wasn't used to saying. Chair of Democracy for America, democracyforamerica.org. And, Jim, it is great to see you.
Tom, thank you so much for having me back on. It's good to see you again. I'm glad you're here. And just by one simple thing, it's democracyforamerica.com.
.com. Did I misstate it?
I think you said .org.
Oh, man. Yeah, you're right. It's .com.
Yeah.
.com. And Jim, my first really up front and close was with Democracy for America was, I think, 2 years ago or so. You guys came to Portland, Oregon and did a thing, and I gave a talk there, and you were doing your training. And I was so impressed by this incredible training program you guys are running. Tell our listeners about what democracyforamerica.com is doing.
Okay, well, we're all about helping people take responsibility over the political process. You know, that's a tough thing to do when you got a lot going on in your life, families to take care of, people you love, a job, everything else. So the whole reason that we have a training, the whole reason we have the 805 groups around the country doing work and taking local action is to help people, support people. If they've got 3 hours a week they can donate to making this country better in politics, then we want to help get them involved and make that experience as productive and as efficient and as positive as possible. So that's really what it is. We got about 725,000 members. We've supported about 1,000 candidates. Most of those were running for local office many times for the first time. But again, it's about citizens taking responsibility over the political process. Hard to do when you got a job and everything. Hard to go sit through a Democratic Party meeting or a planning and zoning meeting, but that's the stuff that's going to make it sing for us and change this world.
We have to get it, my friends. It's not enough to just vote.
Yep, that's it.
You've got to get out there and get active.
You're darn right.
And you are teaching people how to do that with Democracy for America. Jim Dean is with us. And this is, in some ways, almost an extension of your brother Howard Dean's 50-state strategy, for which he was ridiculed early on, and I think that it was the most brilliant thing that has happened in the Democratic Party since LBJ was president and came up with the Great Society. And it's because we're talking about restoring democracy to a democracy.
Right, exactly. And you know, Howard started Democracy for America in 2004 before he went to the DNC. With the idea that we would help people run for office. We've changed that a little bit because we want to help people just get involved. There's lots of different ways to change things, and running for office is a very important one, but it's not the only one. In many respects, when we were doing trainings this wintertime, it was an eye-opener. Birmingham, Alabama, Oklahoma, Texas, a lot of these states, places associated with Republicans that people had given up on, have a lot of people doing great work. You know, there's a Young Democrats Club at Oral Roberts University right now.
You're kidding.
Yeah, I just found out about 6 months ago. I mean, there's a lot of
stuff.
Does
it have more than two members?
I think it does. I think it does. But there's just a lot of people out there doing great work. And to say that, you know, we can't win in one place or win in another is ridiculous. We got to be a national party.
Yes.
And as my little slogan is, the party that empowers is going to be the party in power. And as long as we're doing that, and helping people get in this, we're going to be okay.
So somebody's, you know, driving down the street right now listening to this or sitting there home, you know, and they're hearing you and I talk about, you know, how Jim Dean about democracyforamerica.com and, you know, great work here. They don't have the time. They can't get to one of your training gigs, which are actually just, I mean, they're great. It's a great investment in a day and a half. It's just how long are they running?
Well, they're actually two days.
Yeah.
But you know, we have this other thing called night school because, you know, where people can't travel. And what we do is every couple of weeks we do it. It's usually for an hour around 8:30 Eastern time. Mm-hmm. You call in for free. If you've got Internet access, you can download the slideshow. And there's a place where you can email or instant message questions, so it's interactive. It's on Blog Talk Radio. We're doing one on September 3rd, actually with a guy, Professor Green, who wrote the study about how effective and how much more effective canvassing and phone banking are and how important they are to elections. And all of this is around the sort of whole get-out-the-vote effort that we want to do. So, you know, we're going to have this guy on along with our training director, Matt Blyzak, and we're going to talk about different ways that we can get involved and help campaigns canvass and help persuade voters to our values and to our candidates. And I think we really need to do that this year. It's going to be really important to winning all this.
That's so true, and it's great that you're doing it. If somebody was to do this without democracyforamerica.com, if somebody just, you know, wanted to get out there and get active.
Yeah.
What would you suggest?
Well, you know,
for somebody it's just not practical to go to a training or even, you know,
call into a night school or whatever.
Right.
The thing is, different communities organize differently. I'm not saying that we're the way to do it or anything like that. I mean, we've got a lot of great tools that you can get off and do this out of the comfort of your own home.
Mm-hmm.
But getting active is the most important thing. You know, I think it helps to get connected, which is why we have 800 groups around the ground and around the country. But there are lots of different ways to do it. Some people feel very comfortable joining the party right off and going to those meetings. A lot of others don't, and they come to us.
Yeah, and
however way there is to do it, do it. That's the most
stuff
important
like
thing.
Drinking liberally.
Yep.
Great
outfit.
In New York,
we love them.
Screening liberally.
Yep.
They watch movies. I mean, you know, you can start your own.
Yep.
There are so many, social and political really opportunities.
Yep. And one of the things you could do is we have a pretty easy tool where you can organize your own group. And we let other groups organize off of our own website on this because we believe in the open source stuff. So if you don't want to keep lists or call 20 people just to have a meeting and want to do this electronically, you can just go on to democracyforamerica.com and start your own group.
That's great.
So it's it's pretty easy to do, but the idea is to make it as easy as possible. Time is very precious to all of us, but this is very, very important that we do this between now and November.
What's the average age of the people who are participating?
Good question. We haven't done that in a long time. We did a survey on that sort of thing back in 2004, and I think the average age was, I don't remember what it was, but it was older than most people thought it was.
I remember, you know, the two things that strike me are we just did a thing in Seattle 2 weeks ago, 1,400 people sold out a convention center, just a bunch of talk show hosts, and a good chunk of the audience, I'd say probably a majority of the audience, was well over 40.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was at the Democracy for America gig a couple of years ago in Portland, I'd say the majority of the audience was under 30. And although there were, you know, it was almost like there were a lot of folks somewhere between, you know, 15 and 30, and there were a lot of folks between 50 and 65, and not many in that middle right there, which is where I think people are just totally sucked into having to make a living and
you know,
put their kids through school and whatever, but it seems like democracy, it looked to me like Democracy for America was one of the more effective outreaches toward the younger segment of our population.
Right, and that comes and goes. And we have a lot of members that are my age. I'm 54 and older who do great stuff. I think we've all got to do different things to reach out to different groups, whether it's age cohort or cultural differences or whatever. And you got to always find new ways to do it and make it fun and make it worthwhile. So, you know, we think about this stuff often. There's no one way to do it. There's no right way to do it. We're into throwing stuff up against the wall to see if it sticks and find out, and that's the only way you learn. So that's what part of what we do, at least organizationally, is to find out what's working best with people who are interested in getting into politics but don't quite know what to do yet.
Is there any corollary to what you're doing on the Republican side?
I'm sure there is. You know, here's the thing about the Republicans. I mean, let me say this first. The Democrats are a coalition party, which is something I'm very proud of. And when we're at our best, which isn't always, but when we are, we're grown up enough to have the kind of debates that we need to have, either whether it's between different constituencies or primaries, that sort of thing. You know, the Republicans have been very good at organizing, but they're very much of a homogeneous, monolithic sort of command structure, and there isn't a lot for new expression. I think that's going to change. If we're successful this November, you know, they're going to have to throw a lot of stuff out that they've been doing for the last 8 years.
But it reflects their worldview.
Yeah, well, that's true.
It very much reflects the way that they think families should be organized, you know,
yep.
The father should be the head of the house.
Well, they're going to have some tough decisions to make about how, you know, ideologically pure they have to be, how driven by religion they have to be, how, you know, driven by one person's view of what values are they have to be. You know, that's kind of the way it's been for the last 8 years, and frankly, it's driven a lot of people away from them, particularly with all the stuff that Bush has done.
Yeah, it's not just like the last 8 years. I mean, look at the Roaring Twenties was really, you know, the
yep.
rise of Republican rule.
Yep.
And the robber baron era in the late 1880s when the Republican Party ceased being a party of reform, as it was up until arguably 1874, and started becoming the party of big business.
Right.
And the bottom line is the Republican Party is the party of big business,
right.
Period, full stop, end of sentence. And then they go out and drag, yep. basically. You know, they dress up like they're something else, like they're the party of religion or the party of family values, they, you know, whatever.
Well, that's true. And, you know, that's changing also because big business is beginning to see the light. And, this is something that I really want to spend some time on after November, because our big business leaders need to be far more constructive about what they're doing in this country and about their role in our democracy than they have been. And they need to take a lot more responsibility for the social challenges that we have, because they're a big part of the problem. And I think they're beginning to understand the importance of having health care for everybody in this country. I think these are certain ways where we can connect with them, but I don't think they're the pockets of Republicans anymore.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's an interesting perspective. Jim Dean, the director of...
Jimmy Dean.
Yeah.
the
chairman of Democracy for America. You can check it out at democracyforamerica.com.
All right, Tom.
Jim, thanks for dropping by.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Great to see you.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, indeed. We'll be right back. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting live from the Democratic National Convention.
Before the hour. Welcome back to Tom Hartman Program, brought to you in part by the SEIU and its 2 million members, dedicated to creating justice for all American workers and their families, on the web at SEIU.org. Service Employees International Union. And a fine group it is. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Anthony in Seattle. Hey, Anthony, what's on your mind today?
Tom, I just would like you to please ask your guests, especially the elected members of Congress, what they think about these protest pins that they've set up outside the convention. I mean, it's the Democratic...
It is a little unseemly, isn't it?
It's the Democratic National Convention. We should be setting the example, not this aberration that's taken place under the Bush administration. Everywhere he goes, they set up protest bins. I mean, it's yeah. ridiculous.
No, Anthony, I absolutely agree with you. And I think that, you know, just having the streets open and say, you know, if you get out of line. But actually, you may be confusing two things. The cages that we all saw on TV that look like Guantanamo on the bay, you know, the little gitmo here.
Yeah.
That's not where they're putting people to protest. That's where they're putting people that they arrest for whatever they arrest them for, typically for protesting in a way that would be illegal. But, you know, certainly there's legal, I mean, you know, there's lots of options for legal protest. But I still think that it's unseemly. And you know, I haven't been out and scoped the whole thing out. I'm going to do it this afternoon. But I'm guessing that there's the equivalent of free speech zones here, and I just think that that's because
Bill
Clinton had them.
Free
you know, Bill Clinton had them as well. This did not start with George W. Bush.
Well, then,
and it's wrong.
It needs to go away. It definitely,
yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about change and this whole convention is about change, then let's start changing something. You know, let's have free speech.
Yeah. Amen. Thank you a lot. Thank you very much, Anthony. Rob in Mesa, Arizona. Hey, Rob, what's on your mind today?
Hey, great. I just wanted to say one thing. We need to hold all of Congress responsible for allowing the health insurance companies to write their own checks. We need to isolate them and better regulate the unfair practices carried on by all the health insurances. You know, in my opinion, they're financially ruining many Americans and even, in my opinion, killing them. And here's my story,
yes.
You know, in short. I worked for a medical company for about 15 years and have been recently laid off, you know, outsourced to younger, cheaper, the same old story. Well, COBRA kicked in. It kicked in at about $1,200 a month, which is like twice the rate that I was paying with my policy being paid with my employer. So to avoid COBRA now and in the future, I thought, well, let me just get an independent plan, and so I decided to apply. Long story short, I was was denied basically. And so what they do is they look back over the last 15 years, and if you have any indication of an illness, because I don't have anything ongoing, but if you have like elevated glucose or something, they will just drop you. So basically,
right.
Here's my story: just scrap COBRA and pass a law that allows you to convert your current policy to an individual policy and take it with you. At the current rate, just make it illegal for insurance companies to hold, you know, companies to have you reapply for insurance once you have it. And then also regulate so they cannot jack up your rates because you fall ill. You know, make them do what insurance was originally created to do. Then, spread out the expense of those of us who are stricken by illness by those who are healthy. You know, the business is a
The concept of insurance is a great concept, which is distribute the risk over as wide a pool as possible. The problem is when profit became the prime driver for insurance, then it becomes imperative to reduce the risk rather than distribute the risk, just to reduce it at the front end. And that's why it's such a better thing that government be providing insurance, you know, as we see with Social Security, for example, old age and poverty insurance, than that some private corporation be providing insurance where they're going to say, yeah, we'll insure this guy, but we're not going to insure you.
Yeah,
the health
of my family should not be compromised to make insurance stockholders or CEOs happy.
Yeah, exactly. Rob, very well said. Thank you very much. Scott in Alameda, California. Hey, Scott, what's up?
Yeah, I'm calling about your earlier guest, Jamal Simmons, who's representing Barack Obama. I was really upset.
Well, he's not representing
him.
He's a consultant to his campaign.
Yeah, well, he's talking about the Georgia. Hello?
Yeah.
He's talking about the Georgia election, and he's saying, well, they just got a bunch more Republicans out there that didn't show up on the earlier polls, and that's why. Well, actually, what it was they replaced Diebold just before the election, replaced 22,000 machines in Georgia that had patches put into them right at the last minute. One of these patches was called Rob Georgia. Okay,
I know. I wrote the expose stories on this. You know, MoveOn.org hired me to write an article about this that was published on Alternate that they sent out to 3.4 million people.
I didn't let him get away with it.
I let him get away with it? Well, what am I going to say to the guy? He's sitting right here going, and he was inside the campaign. What he is saying to all of us is that that's what these guys believe. And, I respectfully disagree with him, but that's what they believe. I think that's pretty astounding.
The other thing is, if we don't have anybody working for us, in other words, you talk about getting out there and being active. I was active for John Kerry. I was a precinct captain for John Kerry. I had 71% turnout in my precinct because of my efforts, okay? And what John Kerry do? Stab us all in the back, all right?
So
if we can't even depend on the people who have the microphone in front of their face calling these lies when they are put up in front of the American people, what are we all going to do?
Scott, as I said, I don't think the guy was... I'm sorry, Scott. I don't think the guy was lying to me. I think that I think he was telling us what he believes. And I find that, frankly, even a little scarier than that somebody would lie to us, is that, it's like it's battered wife syndrome in the Democratic Party. I'm telling you, right across the board, so much of the Democratic Party is this, we'll find some excuse to explain how this happened. See, it sure was amazing, wasn't it, how the Republicans did that? Must be a reason. Tom Hartman here, live from the Democratic National Convention in Denver. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. And
check it out. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. It requires you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.